Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:37 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 2nd. Well, Jay Powell today made a rather interesting statement, and it was that the economy is almost too good to be true. Well, that sapped energy in the equity markets, and interestingly, the bond markets were down about 3 basis points. So we're continuing to see some consolidation of that run-up in yields since the middle of August, and not least because there's some lateral resistance in the region of the May peak. But certainly we haven't had that string of downward dynamics similar to what we saw in May for, on this occasion, and it continues to hold this move above 3%. Well, if the economy is almost too good to be true, it just suggests that they are going to continue to raise interest rates. So that is contributing to a further flattening of the yield curve, and it's coming back towards the 20 basis point level, but it has been rather stable over the course of the last few months. When we look at the S&P 500, it was in negative territory today, and starting to take into account that things are looking rather good, so therefore corporate profits should be coming in rather robust form. But something that has also occurred over the course of the last few weeks has been that analysts' expectations for earnings in the third quarter have been downgraded, just almost right across the board. And with interest rates continuing to look like they're going to continue to rise, well, then that's likely to add something of a headwind to equities at some stage. High yield spreads are still very low, and a good part of the reason for why that is because a lot of the debt included in these high yield spreads is related to oil, and of course oil prices have been really very firm. So the price got all the way up to $85 yesterday and was trading above that level for a good part of today, but so far this has been a reasonably consistent advance, and we've had two $10 consolidations this year, with and each time those have been resolved by $10 advances. So it's reasonable to anticipate that the next time we see a meaningful area of resistance, probably going to be around $90, and that's only assuming that it's going to be a consistent trend. But what we are also now starting to see is some interest in the wider commodity complex. Copper prices today were spent most of the day in positive territory, but gave up a good part of the advance. Now, it has rallied so far to break that sequence of lower rally highs evident since June, but it really does need to hold the rally in order to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Zinc prices have also really been quite firm over the course of the last 3 weeks. They've now almost completely unwound the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So, but the more important point is that it has now broken that downtrend since the peak in May. This is one of the more impressive rallies that we've seen in the industrial metals complex. So there is the, on the one hand, people are starting to worry about what's going on in Italy and the Federal Reserve's continued pace of interest rate hikes, whereas on the other, there is the potential that the Chinese market is starting to turn in terms of commodity demand, with more of a focus being thrown back onto domestic demand growth rather than environmental concerns. That is, I think, an important consequence of the trade war. Then, when we think about what is going on in Europe, the vast majority of what people are talking about right now are Italian yields. And the 2 year has been, the yield has been up now 3 consecutive days. It's testing the 1.5% level. What I find particularly interesting is that this looks like a first step above the base. If we were to simply take the name off the chart and take off the scale, we would simply conclude that this is a first step above the base. And that what is also quite interesting in terms of the size of the move that we've seen so far is that it's so far comparatively similar in size to the move that we had in 2010. But on this occasion, it's coming from a much lower base, and what that suggests is that there is plenty of runway for an additional move higher in yields for the Italian sovereign market. Well, that is weighing on the banking sector in no uncertain terms. And sorry, I haven't got the right ticker for UniCredit, UCG. Pardon my typing. Well, this is now leading on the downside, so is IMI San Paolo. And part of the reason for that, of course, is because they own a lot of sovereign debt. But the MIB, in fact, was bouncing off its low in here today. So it hasn't quite broken the 20,000 point level yet, but it really has an awful lot of work to do in order to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And the problem for Europe generally is that it is populist parties seem to be gaining ground, not just in Italy, but elsewhere. And this holds out the prospect that there are going to be more upstart movements in various elections as they occur. Now, there is an additional way of thinking about all of this, that the Federal Reserve Chairman is saying that the economy is doing surprisingly well, and Europe's isn't. That this fiscal straitjacket that has been imposed by Germany is not really working in terms of getting people back to work and tackling what is still a very high unemployment rate right across the Eurozone, particularly continental Europe. Well, they could decide that they are going to go for the fiscal stimulus, that quantitative easing is rather good at inflating asset prices, and property in Munich, for example, is certainly no longer cheap, but it doesn't do very well at spreading that largesse evenly. And then there is the additional question of what is it that Europe exactly wants? Do they prize keeping the political union together higher than standards of living for what is approximately 450 million people? Well, we're going to get an answer to that in, I suspect, the not-too-distant future. Is there the realistic possibility that Europe could potentially go down the fiscal stimulus route? Well, that would start to contribute to inflationary pressures, potentially, but it could be a way to break the the impasse that you have between the beneficiaries and those that have not benefited from what has been a very difficult 10-year period for Europe. Now, when we look at the Eurostoxx index, it's right in the region of the trend mean, and it is so far above the lows that we saw in September and February through March. But it needs to rally in order to really break this succession of lower rally highs since January. If it can do that, well, that will, I think, improve the potential that it's going to be able to break on the upside and join other major stock markets in trending higher. But if it fails, well, then that is going to represent a further intensification of the pressures that are coming to bear on the Eurozone. So it's at a rather do-or-die moment within this rather tight range that we've had over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Well, the mainland Chinese market is closed for Golden Week, but the Hang Seng Index was in negative territory in a rather dynamic manner in here today. And it continues to hold this sequence of lower rally highs. When we look at this on a weekly basis, well, the lower rally highs are rivetingly consistent, and this continues to represent very consistent downtrend, and there's no real evidence that that's over just yet. And it really would need to sustain a move above the trend mean to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance, and perhaps more importantly, to pressure the shorts. So this remains a rather taut environment for Hong Kong. There's been a great deal of volatility on what is normally a staid market for the Hong Kong dollar. It rallied pretty impressively last week and then gave up almost the entire rally this week. Well, what that suggests is that the Hong Kong Monetary Authority is becoming increasingly active in the market, but at the same time, there is the simple fact that HSBC, for example, raised the prime rate in Hong Kong last week. So interest rate rises in the US are being passed on into the Hong Kong market. If we're looking for overpriced property, well, you don't have to look much further than Hong Kong. The price of property there is eye-watering, and a large number of people are relying on their parents to remortgage their homes in order to get on the property ladder. So that is creating transgenerational exposure to the property market. And well, the Hong Kong market has been a cyclical property market from time immemorial, and there's nothing to really suggest that that isn't still the case. So rising interest rates in the USA do represent a headwind for Hong Kong, and that's before we even begin to consider that the Chinese mainland market is under pressure from the trade war. There's the potential for the trade war to intensify. There was news today that there was a near miss between a US and a Chinese destroyer in near the Spratly Islands, only 45 meter, excuse me, 45 feet between the two ships. So that is the kind of activity that can create an accident, and an accident is not exactly what the global economy needs right now when we're talking about two of the largest economies in the world that are nuclear armed. So there are risks out there in terms of the impact that you have on the Chinese markets. Then when we look at what's been going on in India, well, the Nifty index was in positive territory in here today, and the banking sector has also bounced somewhat, but it really needs to string together a couple of days on the upside to really demonstrate that the worst is behind it. Well, the nationalization of ILS and SF yesterday is, I think, a positive factor that the RBI is willing to do something to allay the potential for a contagion. But the rupee remains weak, and as long as the rupee remains weak, then that's going to be something of a headwind for encouraging foreign investors to get really active once more in the Indian markets. So I think we are still in this medium-term corrective phase for the Indian markets. Then the Australian ASX 200 was also in negative territory in here today, and down 46 points. But more importantly than that, it has now broken that sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of September. It's coming back towards this 6,100 point level, which represents the region of the trend mean, and this is where it needs to bounce. If it's going to bounce, then this is about where we should start to see that to happen. Then the ASX Resources Index continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean. It's getting a tailwind from this bounce that we've had in the industrial resources and indeed in the soft commodities. Well, coffee in particular today had a very clear upward advance, and it has held on to all of the advance through the end of the session. So this is the first really clear upward dynamic that we've seen in a year, and it, I think, marks at least a low of near-term significance. It's at least going to unwind the oversold condition relative to the trend mean, but the fact that it is right in the region of the lows we saw back in 2013 and 2008, and we're starting to see upward dynamics now, well, I think that is really contributing to more credibility for the argument that this is a medium-term low. Then sugar prices were also up in a rather robust manner in here today. This is really the first very clear upward dynamic we've seen in months, and now it is pressuring the region of the trend mean. Well, sugar prices have pulled back in a very meaningful way over the last 2 years, so they are also in the region of the lows from 2015 and 2008 in this case, And we're now starting to see upward dynamics. So this was when I've been talking about precious metals over the course of the last few weeks. What I've been rather disappointed by is the fact that we haven't had very big upward dynamics to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But gold prices were up almost $15 in here today, and they're coming back up towards the upper side of this range. Well, we had the failed downside break on Friday, and now the chances are that it's going to come back up and test the upper side of this range, which is only about $10 away. But it needs to break up and out of that range to at least suggest that we have more than short-term steadying. I think that the odds are improving that it will in fact do that because silver prices have now pushed through the midpoint of the overhead trading range that persisted from the middle of August to the beginning of September, and it is coming back towards the region of the trend mean. But it would certainly have been more encouraging if it had been able to hold on to all of its gain in here today. And platinum prices are in a similar situation, that they have now broken the progression of lower rally highs. We're starting to see some, rather than $800 be an area of resistance, it's now an area of support again. And platinum is where we have some of the clearest evidence that demand is beginning to return to dominance. And of course, $800 was an area of support back in 2015 and 2008. So if we were to simply take the labels off the chart, this does not look all that different from the sugar price. Well, what that also tells us is that there's been a lot of selling pressure, not just in the precious metals or in the industrial metals, but right across the commodities complex. Well, commodities seem to be getting some safe haven buying in here, and not least because oil prices have also been steadying in here. But the continuous commodity index has bounced from the lower side of a 2-year range. It's right in the region of the trend mean right now. But really, a clear downward dynamic would be required to question potential for this to not just push straight back up to the upper side of its range. Well, commodities are a cyclical sector. They generally tend to do well towards the latter stages of a bull market. And we're in a situation where the economy, particularly in the US, is doing well, where interest rates are really only just beginning to rise above negative real interest rates. So they've been the Federal Reserve might have raised rates 8 times already, but we're only just now at a point where the nominal rate is above the inflation rate. So that would suggest that we're only at the very beginning of the tightening cycle. And it's around this time that you would anticipate that commodity prices should start to do well. So they did have a big move in 2016, and there is a realistic possibility that we could anticipate that commodities will do better from here on out. Well, I was rather surprised by the extent to which biotech shares pulled back yesterday, and they were again in negative territory in here today, but not terribly large downward dynamics. And I think that when we look at the trend, that we've have two volatile ranges, one in 2016 and another one in the latter half of 2017 through to the middle of this year, and really a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to question that this isn't still a recovery scenario. And of course, biotech is also a cyclical sector. Well, then let's take a look at what's going on with banks. The S&P 500 Banks Index has been pulling back over the last 5 or 6 sessions, and now it's approximating the region of the trend mean. This is about where, if support is going to be found, well, this is where we might anticipate it would occur. The Russell 2000 Index of small caps pulled back sharply yesterday and extended that decline today, and this looks like a reversion back towards the mean. Well, the Russell 2000 is important for 2 reasons. The first is that it's a domestic play on the US economy. So the fact that you do have the outlook for interest rates to continue to rise, well, that's obviously going to have some effect on the domestic economy. But more importantly than that, the Russell was the index that broke out first. And It really does need to hold that move above the 1600 point level. If it does, well, we can just consider that this is another step in terms of this uptrend that really began in 2016. If it fails, well, then that would be a really quite a significant trend in consistency. So it is now really not all that far away from where it could be anticipated that it should find support. Well, at the other side of that equation, you have the Dow Jones, which was in positive territory today and is finishing towards the upper side of its range. Well, part of the reason for that is because it's loaded by companies that are not especially influenced by the domestic situation, but more by the international market. And the international market does look like it is starting to perk up. So the Dow was the index that broke out last, and now it is exhibiting relative strength. I'm paying particular attention to the semiconductors index because it has experienced a loss of momentum, and we have failed upside breaks above that 1400 point level. It was relatively unchanged in here today, but what we've definitely seen is a falling off in the commonality that was evident within the index. So I think this is one that is really worth keeping an eye on. Now, I've often referred to Tesla and Netflix as the canaries in the coal mine because they're very much within the high yield sector, and neither of them really make any money. Well, Elon Musk paid $20 million and got a get out of jail free card for someone worth who has personal assets in the region of 20 billion. 20 million really is a slap on the wrist. And they hit their targets for the Model 3 in the last quarter, but the share price continues to pause below the trend mean. There is extraordinary volatility here, and Tesla is just not out of the woods just yet. I think the clearest redeeming characteristic that it has is that the company has already built its factory, whereas lots of the other car companies have got major capital expenditure planned in order to get up to scale in terms of their electric vehicles. Netflix, on the other hand, is toying with the idea of interactive programming, and but it is also off its highs in here today. Well, what this suggests to me is that we've probably seen the peaks in the medium term for these shares, but we're probably in for I think Tesla is at more of a risk than Netflix, but these are the canaries in the coal mine. As long as they're holding the regions of their recent lows, then the people are unlikely to see or to experience a lot of angst. But if we start to see Netflix and Tesla really underperforming, well, these were the companies that benefited most from this massive availability of very cheap credit, and they've made enormous bets. Well, they may need a while longer to get the full fruits of those bets, and quite whether that is achievable before interest rates become a challenge to their funding is the very big question that's outstanding. But they represent, I think, some of the most acute risks in this market. What was also interesting in here today was Amazon decided that it was going to offer $15 an hour to its US workers, and I think somewhere in the region of £10 an hour for UK workers. Well, that has held up the share a little, and it continues to pause around this psychological $2,000 level. Well, it's really quite overextended relative to the trend mean. A much broader scope picture, of course, is that Amazon did not voluntarily just give everyone a pay hike, but that we have very low unemployment, and they probably needed to offer better wages to encourage more workers to join their ranks, considering that Amazon is going to have to hire an additional 100,000 people in the USA to cater for the Christmas rush. When we take a step back and think about exactly where we are, well, we know that we're late in the cycle, And we've already seen that energy is doing better, that the kinds of things that are lead indicators for real problems in the future are not flashing red. So we're still in a situation where markets are perhaps a little bit overbought in the short term, and there is some risk that we get some consolidation, just like we're seeing in the Russell 2000 right now. But it's the recovery in commodity prices that is one of the clearest indications that there is a shift going on. And what that I think represents is that people are starting to look at cheap assets, and commodities right now are at historic lows. I think that is, if we're talking about buying low and selling high, then the commodity complex does look rather attractive at these levels. Well, the big questions that are outstanding are whether Italy is going to be a loner in terms of its fiscal stimulus, or whether it can manage to convert the rest of Europe. I think Germany, in particular, is going to be a hard case to win over in that regard. And then there's the question of what exactly is going to happen with regard to China and the trade war, and that has not intensified to a point which has acted as a headwind to growth in North America or in Europe just yet. But there is also the way of thinking about it that agreeing an update to NAFTA frees the Trump administration's hand to focus entirely now on the trade war with China. So there are certainly risks here, and I think when that there's a risk that things become more elevated. But so far, what we've seen with China and its response is that they are opening up, or they are, I think, taking some of the pressure that had been imposed upon the banking sector off. They're taking some of the pressure off the commodities complex that had been imposed over the last couple of years. They're walking back from their environmental commitments, so that should help to stimulate growth, considering how profound the those rules had become. Well, that does suggest that, and there's a lot of bad news has already been priced into China, and that we do have the potential for a bounce. But since the market is closed right now, we're going to have to wait until next week to see whether that is in fact going to be the case. So I do think that there is some short-term risk in stock markets right now, that we could have a reversion back towards the mean, or a somewhat shallower reaction than we had back in February, just because the index, the S&P, for example, is about 6% overextended relative to the trend mean. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and wish all the best to all of you.